Ah, the first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to Caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at Caskers.com.
This episode of the Old Dogs REI Network is brought to you by Mino Studio.
In a world where jobs are how most people make money, one man, one desire, one challenge, dares to break the mold. Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network, where we don't work for money. Money works for us. Coming soon, viewer discretion advised.
Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network, where cash flow is king. Real estate investing, the means, so you can enjoy your retirement dreams. This is the show where we cut right to the chase. No sales pitch, no long monologues, just simple how-to real estate investing advice, so you can earn the passive income you need to enjoy your retirement today. And now, your host and chief old dog, Bill Manassero.
Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network. I'm your host, Bill Manassero, and this is a show where 50-plussers and anyone else who wants to join us get solid, no-sales-pitch real estate investing advice to help generate real cash flow. This podcast airs twice weekly on Mondays and Fridays, and if you aren't already a subscriber, go to iTunes or Apple Podcast, type in Old Dogs, spelled D-A-W-G, find our podcast and subscribe. Well, you guys, if you've listened to the show for any period of time, you know that we don't only feature old dogs on this show. We occasionally allow some young pups to come in here. So we have one today. Her name is Rachel Richards. She's only 27 years old, but definitely very well-schooled in real estate and in a lot of other things on top of that. Only 28 years old, Rachel quit her job and retired, living off her $10,000 per month in passive income. Rachel has made a name for herself in the personal finance realm. So she's not just a real estate investor. She's an expert here on personal finance. She is the best-selling author of Money Honey and Passive Income, Aggressive Retirement. She has been featured on The Penny Hoarder and New York Times and contracted to speak at colleges. Her valuable lessons have helped thousands of female millennials work their way out of financial despair. She has successfully done what no one has done before, made the topic of money management fun and entertaining and simple. Okay, so I've got to hear how you do that. Okay. Rachel has a Bachelor's of Science in Financial Economics for Center College. She has held roles as a financial advisor, a real estate analyst, and a senior finance analyst. She has just recently moved to the beautiful state of Colorado with her husband and dog. Well, hey, Rachel, welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network.
Hey, thanks, Bill. Thanks for having the young pup on. I appreciate it.
Well, we're both dog people. You got a little dog. We got a dog. Yeah. You know, I'm an old dog. Okay, so it's great having you on. This is a very inspiring story, and I love to hear stories like this where people start out earlier in life and they get it, and they get it early on. I know there's a lot of things that went into your story, as I shared, you know, $10,000 per month, monthly passive income. It's not just making the money, but it's also managing the money and probably keeping your expenses low and a lot of other things. So I want to hear just your story, you know, kind of where you came from and how you kind of ended up where you are.
Oh, for sure. For as long as I've known, I have been so intrigued by money. One of my first memories was when I was in sixth grade and I was at a summer camp. And instead of going on the water slide with all my friends, I was sitting at the pool reading this book called The Motley Fool's Guide for Teens, How to Have More Money Than Your Parents Ever Dreamed Of.
I love it. That's great.
Yeah, I was a finance nerd at a young age for sure. And I still am to this day. But I grew up, I was an avid reader. I kept learning about money. Eventually started learning about real estate investing and graduated college in 2013. I started my job, I was only making $32,000 per year, and I've never made six figures. So by no means am I some really, you know, wealthy person that's making a ton of money. I've just been able to be frugal, save a lot of money, you know, invest my money wisely. In 2017, my husband and I purchased our first duplex. And prior to that, we had $0 in passive income. So that's really when our journey towards financial independence started. So we bought our first rental property. Later that year, I published my first book, Money Honey. And we had these two passive income streams, rental income and royalty income. And we focused on growing those as much as we possibly could over the next few years. So fast forward to now, and we now own almost 40 units in Kentucky. And I just launched my second best-selling book, Passive Income, Aggressive Retirement. So my book royalty income stream has also grown significantly. And last year we got to the $10,000 per month mark, and I was able to quit my job and become financially independent.
Oh, that is just fascinating. That's just amazing. And writing. Now, did you know you had a skill for writing, or did you? Is it something that you really had to work at to get that first book done?
I've always been a strong writer. When I was little, I would write short stories. But I think I grew up thinking, well, I need to do something practical, you know, something that would make money, which now the irony is hilarious to me. So that's why I went into finance and became a financial advisor and then a finance analyst. But I started writing Money Honey because all of my family and friends were coming to me for financial advice, which was great because I love to help people. I began to wonder, though, you know, why aren't they learning on their own or reading books? And then I remembered, oh, yeah, personal finance is boring. It's dull. It's complex. It's overwhelming. So I thought to myself, well, how can I make this topic fun and sassy and simple? And that's where the idea for Money Honey came from. I sat down, I started writing it. The words kind of poured out of me. It's almost like I already had this book inside of me, and I was just very compelled to put pen to paper. So, and not to say that the whole writing journey was easy. I had my ups and downs for sure, but I think I've always wanted to write a book, and so I finally made it happen.
Now, Money Honey, is it, I noticed in your bio talk about, you know, the women that have been influenced by what you're doing. Is it geared towards women primarily, or is it more general in context?
Yeah, well, the money principles can be applied for anybody, but because I'm a female millennial and that's who was asking me questions all the time, I kind of wrote the book, my voice is intended to kind of attract female millennials to reading the book. So it really resonates with that specific audience the most, but I've had, you know, men, older people, everyone read the book, and I've had really positive reviews so far.
Is the book what you would say is it sort of a primer or something to, you know, somebody that's just trying to figure out getting a checkbook, getting a bank account, and just, you know, trying to get their financial, you know, they're getting their first jobs,
yes,
trying to get their life together. Is that sort of the framework in which it's written?
Yeah, for sure. It's really for someone starting out, college students, recent grads, you know, younger people. It goes over the basics of money management, like budgeting, savings, debt, and investing.
Do you address things like student loans as well? I mean, I know a lot of millennials. That's one of the big things that holds a lot of them back from even buying their first home.
Yes, I do. I have a chapter on student loans. You know, there's a lot of different opinions and everything out there. But, you know, one of the things I talk about is college, having a bachelor's degree isn't the home run it used to be. Everyone has a bachelor's degree now. And you really have to think, is the investment going to be worth it? And I try to encourage people to attempt to calculate the ROI on their degree before they go to school. But in reality, that's impossible because you don't know how much you're going to be making after college. When I got my financial economics degree, you know, all my professors were telling me your starting salary for this degree is going to be $60,000. And then when I got into the workforce and I had, you know, a 3.99 GPA, I had a great resume, I still was only making $32,000 after college. So it's really difficult to predict what the ROI is going to be on your college degree. But I think there's a lot of alternative options these days that people could consider, like trade or vocational school, or starting at a public university or community college and then transferring your credits later to get a degree from a different school. Or for people that go into the military, my husband used his military benefits to pay for his college tuition.
Yeah, and that's great. And also probably helped on that first home, too, I would imagine. That the VA loans are awesome.
He bought his primary residence before he met me. But yes, he did use a VA loan on that. And that's a really great benefit.
Yeah, that's great. Now, you talk about this $10,000 per month that you've been receiving now. You've reached that level. And what percentage of that is real estate versus royalty income, if you wouldn't mind sharing?
Oh, yeah, I don't mind at all. So it's actually close. It's probably more like $15,000 a month now. But in a normal month, not during coronavirus, because I can talk about how my rental income has been impacted by coronavirus. But in a normal month, we are making anywhere from $7,000 to $12,000 per month in profit from the rental income. And then my book royalties, in February, I just had my first $7,000 month in book profit.
Oh, that's awesome. Now, are you promoting your book or is a publisher promoting? How does that work from your standpoint?
Yeah, so I'm self-published. A lot of people are choosing to be self-published these days because you can retain a lot more control and then you actually make a much higher royalty. But, you know, that means that I'm doing all the promoting and marketing of my book on my own.
God,
now, the funny thing
impressive.
Is... Yeah, oh, thank you. The funny thing is my first book, Money Honey, there's a cuss word in the title. So it's a simple 7-step guide for getting your financial bleep together. Uh-huh. And I didn't actually know this, but on Amazon and Facebook, you can't advertise your book if there's a cuss word on the cover. So I've been very fortunate that my book, my first book, has organically done very, very well. I think I'm close to selling almost 15,000 copies of Money Honey with no advertising.
That's amazing. And listing with Amazon is easy as a self-published author?
Yes, it's so easy. I really recommend any first-time author go that route, self-publish with Amazon. You know, I didn't have a following. I didn't have a social media platform. And so for a first-time author that is in, you know, a similar position, self-publishing is definitely the way to go.
That's great. And how many pages is the book?
It's a little bit under 200 for Money Honey. And then Passive Income Aggressive Retirement is about 250 pages.
Gotcha. And do you have like worksheets in there and things like that people can use? Or do you have a link maybe to a website that might have those types of things?
Yes. So actually in Money Honey, I have the free budgeting worksheets that are offered in the book. And for anyone listening, if you want to access that, you can go to moneyhoneyrachel.com/free.
Oh, that's cool. That's great. That's great. Yeah. Well, why real estate? Now, it sounds like you guys already had a mindset because you bought a duplex. Sound like you were house hackers, right? So was that intentional or was it were you thinking we're going to do this through real estate investing?
Yeah, before I started researching passive income and realizing all the other types of passive income, I really only knew about real estate investing. And I had read tons of books. I think one of the first books I read was Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and that opened up my eyes to the world of real estate investing. And even at a young age, to me, real estate investing is one of the best tools for building long-term wealth. So it's something I always knew I wanted to do. That's why we had started looking to invest in a property in 2016. It took a long time, but in 2017, we finally closed on our first duplex.
And you're quite a saver, too, from what we've talked offline as well. That was a big part of probably getting started, I would imagine.
Yes, yeah, because a lot of people ask me, well, how'd you come up with the money for the first down payment? And there's a couple of things we had going for us. So again, my husband graduated from college debt-free because he used his military benefits. And Bill, I don't know if you've heard of Cutco Cutlery. Have you heard of Cutco Knives?
I think so, yeah. Uh-huh.
Okay, it's a direct sales company. It's knives that are made in the U.S. But I took a job selling Cutco Knives throughout college, and I paid my way through school. So that is, I paid for school on my own, and I did it by selling knives.
Wow. Yeah. By selling knives. That is crazy. Yeah, wow. That's a great accomplishment. Wow.
Thank you. It's definitely one of my proudest accomplishments. So, and I had that going for me too. I was also able to graduate from college debt-free. So my husband and I, we didn't have any debt. And it's not that we were making six figures, either of us, when we met, but we were just trying to be responsible with our money and keep our expenses in line. Even from a young age, when I was making the $32,000, I was finding a way to save 50% of my income. So I was living off $16,000 for that first year out of school. Wow. And that, yeah, so that was an interesting year. But we were able to save up a good chunk by the time we started investing. And the other thing too is we invested in Louisville, Kentucky. And that's a really great cost of living area. The housing market's great. Anytime you invest in the Midwest in general, I think that's a great place to invest. So our first duplex, it only cost $100,000. So my husband and I, we both put 10 grand each into this investment to get us to our $20,000 down payment. And that's how we bought our first property.
Ah, and you didn't, did you look at FHA loans? I mean, put a lower down, or did you just, you wanted to put a bigger down payment down?
Yeah, so we actually did not do house hacking. So we purchased it solely as an investment property. So that's why we weren't able to do an FHA loan on it.
Weren't living in one of the units. Oh, okay.
Yeah,
I got
right.
it.
Yeah, we were living in our primary residence, which he had purchased with his VA loan.
Gotcha. Yeah. Okay. So you bought it initially as an investment. Okay, mm-hmm. Cool. And what about landlording? I mean, did you just kind of pick that up as you went along, or did you, you know, have some help there to just, you know how to screen tenants, find the right tenants, if you had to evict or do anything else?
Yeah, it's something I'm still learning as I go, honestly. but I did take a couple jobs in the real estate industry, so I knew a ton of agents and investors, which helped because I had some people I could turn to if I ever had questions. But honestly, the way that I've always learned the best is just by reading books. One of my favorite real estate books is called Hold by Steve Chater and the McKissicks.
Yeah, we had Linda on our show. Yeah.
Oh my gosh, yeah. I talk about it all the time. I love that book. I mean, I still use some of their cash flow analysis and everything. So yeah, I mean, I read about how to be a landlord, how to manage tenants, how to screen tenants, and I just kind of learned as I went.
Oh, that's great. And that really is, I believe, with real estate, with all my heart, you know, I've kind of learned the hard way too. As many books as I read, and I read some of the best ones out there, Ken McElroy's and, you know, Kiyosaki's and all those. But I really think the real learning starts when you sign that first set of escrow papers. And after that, that's when the learning really begins. And you kind of learn the hard way. But at least I did. I don't know.
I did too. I mean, it was scary at first. I made plenty of mistakes. And I think that's just the way it is for anybody.
Now, you were a financial advisor. Is that like a financial planner? I mean, are they similar, or is it a very different thing?
So a financial planner tends to be somebody that can help with a wide range of topics, from budgeting to debt payoff to sometimes investing. And then a financial advisor normally focuses solely on investing. So I was helping clients invest their portfolios, whether it was their retirement accounts or just normal brokerage accounts. I was telling them how to invest their money.
Huh. And do you still apply the things that you were teaching to others today in terms of taking your funds and diversifying and moving into different types of investments other than real estate?
Yeah, and I would say my passion now is really helping young people, especially with how to manage their money. And investing is always one of my biggest passions, because when you're young, time is your biggest advantage. So I'm always trying to educate and reiterate the importance of getting invested at a young age. You know, the best time to plant a tree, 20 years ago. Second best time is today.
So what do you tell a fellow millennial? Okay, they're finally, they get this job, they're making some decent income, they've got a little extra money, they're setting aside. What kind of advice do you give to them? Maybe even before they have to invest, are there other things that they should be doing?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it all starts with budgeting. The way I see budgeting, and I used to hate the word even, because to me, budgeting is just tedious and dreadful. And I think a lot of people feel that way. But it's really an empowering tool. I see budgeting as a GPS. It's almost a map for how to get from point A to point B. You have to have a budget and know where your money is going. Dave Ramsey once said that a budget is simply telling your money where to go instead of wondering where it went. And I love that quote. So that's really where I tell people to start. You know, once you start tracking your expenses, it will be very obvious where to cut back. And even to this day, it's always a surprise when I see how much I've spent in certain categories. But that's what keeps me in line more than anything is my budget. And then from there, it really gets into how to strategize between savings and debt payoff. And that's probably the question I get the most is, hey, do I put this extra money towards savings or towards debt payoff? What I'm telling people right now, if we are, you know, possibly headed into a recession, we're dealing with the coronavirus crisis, cash is king. So if you don't have an emergency savings account funded, definitely sock some money away just in case, because right now cash is king.
You know, you mentioned Dave Ramsey on that too. Is that one of the first things you advocate, is to build up sort of that reserve account or that 6 months or 3 months of funds that before they even start investing?
Yes, for sure. So kind of step one is to fill up, and I have savings buckets. It's a concept in my book, Money Honey, but fill up bucket number one. And bucket number one is meant for emergency savings. So you should always have at least $1,000 set aside just for any small unexpected expenses. Then you have bucket two, which is really for a kind of a longer term savings account, emergency savings account. So I recommend having at least 3 to 6 months of expenses set aside in bucket number two. And also anything that you're saving for within the next 12 months, whether it's a trip home or Christmas gifts or anything like that, that should be held in bucket number two. And, you know, then it goes into, well, you need to start paying down your high interest debt while you're saving. So there's a lot of different strategies and places you can kind of go from there.
Gotcha. And with these little buckets, that do you recommend putting those into what, index funds, or maybe something that has a higher yield than, just a regular bank savings account?
Yeah. So I basically, there's four buckets. Bucket one is for emergencies. And I always say to keep that money either in cash or just somewhere very liquid, like a checking account. And then bucket number two is for medium-term savings, anything within the next year. I always recommend keeping that in a high yield online savings account, because you'll get a little bit higher return than you would in a normal checking account. But I generally recommend to not invest in the stock market unless you're going to keep your money there for at least a year, because the stock market is really for long-term investing. And if you sell and buy stocks within 1 year, you're going to have to pay capital gains taxes. So that's why bucket number two would be in a high yield online savings account. And then bucket number three is for long-term savings. So for those with, you know, a long time until retirement and they can invest for the longer term, I recommend investing that in passive investments, things like index funds and ETFs. And then bucket number four is for retirement. And I recommend doing the same thing, index funds and ETFs, as long as you have, you know, at least 5 years until you retire.
And do you recommend self-directed types of vehicles in that retirement account?
Yeah, you can. I think for like some more of my advanced readers, they've asked a little bit about that. And that gives you more flexibility, especially with investing in real estate. So I think it can be a really, really great tool.
Oh, that's great. Well, you know, starting off the way you have, and it's just amazing being so young and accomplishing what you've accomplished. I imagine, though, you did have those challenges, or sort of those big mistakes that we call them, that we really learn from. I don't consider a mistake a bad thing. I look forward to them, because I can. It's just another thing I'm going to learn and hopefully overcome and not do again. But what would you say some of your biggest mistakes were early on when you first got started?
Yeah, with real estate investing specifically, I've made a lot of mistakes. And one of them in particular was pretty bad. It's pretty embarrassing. But like you said, I like to talk about my mistakes because I hope somebody else can learn from them. So, you know, we were looking for a property manager. And I always tell people, hey, rental income can definitely be passive. But if you want it to be passive, you absolutely have to build in the cost of having a property manager. Even if you're not going to hire one when you first start out or for your first few properties, that's fine. Just make sure you build in the cost of having one so that you can hire one later. Because chances are, at least for myself, like I didn't want to quit my job to become a full-time landlord. So I knew that I wanted to have a property manager in place so it could really be hands-off. So when my husband and I were looking to hire our first property manager, we decided to try to just find like an individual, whether it was a real estate agent or somebody we could employ, because we figured we could save money that way. And at the time, there were these two individuals working for us, a husband and a wife, and these were the hardest working people I had personally ever met. They had been doing work for us at our properties already in terms of cleaning some of the common areas, doing some of the maintenance, things like that. They were always willing to go above and beyond. So my husband and I figured, well, let's offer the job to them and see if they like it and see how that'll work. So we did. We made them employees of our company, taught them everything, and it started off fine. You can probably see where this is going. And then one Saturday morning, my husband went over to collect rent from some of the lockboxes we had on site, and he noticed that a bunch of the rent money was missing. And it wasn't just the normal late fee or tenant paying late. There was a lot missing. So of course we were calling our employees. They weren't answering. It was about $6,000 that was missing that weekend, but the couple that we had hired stole that and basically left.
Oh, gee.
Yeah. And we found out that they had been squatting in vacant rooms in our properties for almost a year.
Oh my gosh.
Yes.
Wow.
That was a huge wake-up call for us in terms of, you know, realizing that hiring an individual like that wasn't a good idea. Realizing that there's certain information we shouldn't be letting individuals access when it comes to our property management and our rentals. And, you know, so we were able to recover from that. But there's a warrant out for their arrest.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, it's crazy. I mean, it's, I laugh about it now. In hindsight, though, it was frustrating because looking back, I could definitely see some of the red flags that I wish I'd really listened to a little bit more. And, you know, the lesson learned, and this is embarrassing because it just seems so obvious in hindsight, but the lesson learned is to don't be cheap when it comes to your property manager. Because if we had hired a property management company that was licensed and bonded and insured, and one of their employees did that to us, they would have been liable for that money, not us.
Right.
So, you know, this is just one of those areas where it's better to pay more money for having that peace of mind and having the higher quality help.
How did you find them initially or come in contact with them?
Oh, Craigslist. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And, you know, we did all the right things. We ran the background check and the credit check, and they had been working for us for about a year and a half before we hired them as employees. So we had built a lot of trust. But again, it's just so silly because when I think about it now, it just seems obvious. I mean, you don't hire people off Craigslist for things like managing your properties.
Sure. Oh, man. Wow. Well, looking at the other side here, on the positive side, what things have you done that really have just resulted in just a great success for you?
We just try to really take care of our tenants. You know, we're not those landlords that you just can't get a hold of. We try to be there. Several of our buildings we bought from another owner that was selling it. And some of the tenants we have now were still there, and they have lived there for 10 years longer than we've even owned the property. So we have at least one tenant in each of our buildings that we really trust and that will keep an eye out for us. And we've developed a really close relationship with. Another thing I think we've done well, because whenever you're managing your properties on your own, and you have, you know, 38 or 40 units, that's a lot of tenants to manage. And especially when they're all living in a building together, there can be a lot of complaints against one another. So we used to get a lot of these calls where tenants would call and complain about something somebody else was doing. And I finally came up with this question that has really solved a lot of our problems. And so we will ask tenants, and we ask this in a nice way, I don't mean this sarcastically, but we'll say, hey, you know, what do you want us to do about it? Right? Like, how can we help? What do you actually want us to do? And once they think that through a little bit, they realize that there's actually nothing we can do. You know, we can send out a warning, we can do whatever. But when it comes down to it, there's not a lot we can do. And I think a lot of the tenants just want to call and vent or complain. But that has helped us with our tenant communication more than anything else we've done.
That's a great approach. I like that.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things that really drew me to your story, too, is the fact that you did all this in a relatively short period of time. I mean, you know, not only, you know, writing a book and a second book, but, you know, building out your portfolio to the point where it could support you. You know, our audience are folks at 50 years of age and older, and these are people that are looking at real estate investing as a means to either supplement their retirement or take their nest egg and be able to grow it better. Or, you know, maybe they're not meeting their needs in terms of what they want to do in their retirement, and they're looking for additional cash flow. So what advice would you have for them, you know, kind of looking at your story? You know, granted, they've worked they're retired or close to retirement, and so they're kind of nearing that point or already in that point where they are retired. What kind of recommendation would you have for them in terms of, you know, sort of growing that little nest egg like you did?
Yeah, I mean, I just think I would encourage them, because it is never too late to get started. A lot of people look at my story and they're like, man, I wish I had started at a young age. But the inspiring thing is that I did this within a matter of 2 to 3 years. So it doesn't matter how old you are, how much money you're making, you can still use real estate investing as a means to achieve financial independence and early retirement. So I would just really encourage people, you know, don't count yourself out because you're older than other people. You absolutely can still get started at a later age.
And also, you know, I noticed your first investment property was a small multi, a duplex. Did you pretty much stick to that as you grew your portfolio?
So we have quite a variety, actually. We have one duplex, two single family homes, and then three buildings that are about 10 to 12 units each.
Great, great. So are you focused more on multis now? Are you still expanding your portfolio?
No, actually, we stopped acquiring in 2018. We got to the point financially where we were making the money we wanted to be making from rental income, but we also got to the point with our time that we just couldn't take on anymore. Because as we were creating this passive income and acquiring rental properties, and as I was writing my book, my husband and I were both working full time. So we were doing this all in the evenings and on the weekends. And that's another piece of advice I would give to anyone out there. You know, I think a lot of times this advice is given to, you know, take a leap of faith and the net will appear. And I don't agree with that. I think anytime you can start generating real estate income on the side, that's your best bet. You know, have an exit strategy for your job or for retirement and be investing in real estate on the side so that you can get that going.
Now, your husband, is he still working full time?
Yes, he is working remote full time, although he doesn't have to from a finance perspective, but he is in a career where he just loves what he does. So he's very happy with that for now.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
And how do you sort of divide up your day in terms of the types of things you're doing? Because you obviously don't have to or don't have a full time job. How is your day divided up?
Yeah, so I say retired that I'm retired. But when I say that, I just mean I'm financially independent. I am still working, but now I'm working because I want to, not because I have to. And, you know, a lot of people might retire, and especially later, and they might do the beach thing or the golf thing. And like, that is great. Like, I love that for anybody. I just get bored easily. So I am this type of person that I feel like I always have to be creating or building something. So now I spend most of my time on my book business. this, because it's really what fulfills me and what I'm completely passionate about. And I could work all day long on teaching people about financial literacy, and I would feel like I had the most fun day ever because I don't see it as work anymore.
Oh, that's cool. That's really cool. And are you thinking of writing a third book, or is that somewhere in the horizon?
Possibility, I would say. I have tended to get so burnt out with my book launches that it takes me like an entire year to recover. I know, and even think about writing another book. But, you know, now that I am in the financial position I'm in, something I've always wanted to do is write fiction. So I think I might start dabbling in that this year, just on the hobby, you know, just for fun. I might start trying to see if I can write a fiction novel.
Oh, that's fun. That's fun. What percentage of time do you spend during the course of the week on your properties?
My husband is doing most of that right now. We've kind of switched back and forth over the past few years, but I would say he spends no more than 10 hours per week managing those.
Oh, great. That's great. That's hardly anything.
Yeah, you know what I realized, Bill, is once we moved away and had this physical distance between us and our rental properties, it seems like the amount of work has gone down. And that's because we've been forced to outsource everything because we're not in Kentucky anymore. We can't just run down to our rental properties if there's an emergency. So it's actually become easier to manage as long distance landlords.
Yeah, there's, you know, that's one of those things that I was real, you know, being in Southern California, it's investing here is really tough. I mean, you just don't get the return. You certainly don't get the cash flow. But I was real reluctant to invest away from where I live. But I realized that it's also a real benefit because I would be running down there every 2 minutes, every time there's something going on. And that's what I pay my property managers for. So,
exactly.
You know, it does actually, there's a sense of freedom in that, you know, being away from the properties too. I mean, there's definitely drawbacks I could list for you as well, but I think the overall benefit is being separated is a positive thing.
Yeah, I mean, I always tell people don't count yourself out because you live in, you know, New York City or California or Washington, D.C. You can still invest elsewhere and manage it really well on your own and with a property manager.
Yeah. Well, you guys are still so young here. And I've got kids older than you, you know. And what sort of your long term, if you have one, you know, sort of a long term play or long term goal?
You know, it's funny because we worked so hard towards this point at which we could retire and become financially independent. And didn't think much past that. And we had really sacrificed 2 to 3 years of our lives where we were both working 80-hour weeks. It was exhausting, definitely an enormous sacrifice. So I think right now our goal is just to relax and enjoy the things that we've created and do all of the hiking in Colorado. That's one of the reasons we moved out here.
Oh, yeah, beautiful.
Yeah, and just kind of take some time off to recharge and enjoy our life.
That's neat. That's neat. Well, this has really zipped by really quickly here. There's a lot of questions I still have for you. you had mentioned you could work if you wanted to. Do you ever still do sort of financial counseling with people? Take on clients or one shot deals?
No, and I don't have my Series 7 and 66 license anymore. That's what I had as a financial advisor. So I can't really advise people what to invest in specifically. I more help people from an educational standpoint. But one thing I started doing this year is I launched my first online course about money management, and it's designed to go along with my first book, Money Honey. So it's enabled me to help people in a much more direct, hands-on way, and that's been a lot of fun.
Oh, that's now it's an online course.
Yeah.
Is it fully automated or do they actually interact with you?
It's kind of half and half. Everything is pre-recorded in terms of the videos because I'm teaching everything on the videos. There's a ton of templates, but then there is an exclusive community just for my course takers, and that's where I'm interacting with people directly. So it's 8 weeks total, but people have lifetime access. And it's called Get Your Financial Bleep Together because it goes along with my book, Money Honey.
Right. What's really interesting here is, you know, a lot of times folks, especially when they're younger like you, and people that that I've interviewed that have been in similar situations, you know, their goal is, okay, I'm, you know, going to get, you know, 10,000 units or what have you. But you guys stopped in 2018, which is really interesting. And, you know, as far as your properties are concerned, is the idea just to hold on to them for as long as you can, and just maintain them and pay them down and just hold on to them and to, until you're, you know, old? Or what's sort of the, you give us maybe the mindset behind that?
Yeah. There's a couple ways we could go with it. And yeah, sometimes people are surprised that we haven't continued to build this real estate empire. But I guess for me, real estate has always been more of a means to an end. And it's not something I was so passionate about creating this huge empire around, you know, so we did it until it got us to the point we wanted to be at financially. And now we've become a lot more hands off with it. So that was kind of our initial strategy. Going forward, yeah, either the play is going to be we just hold on to them for the rest of our life and really accumulate that long term equity and wealth. Or we've also thought about starting to sell one or two of them off, because if we can transition the money we have in our rentals to investing it in the in a stock market and generating portfolio income, that's actually a lot more passive for us. And for us, the whole goal is just to have the passive income. So we might eventually transition our money out of the rentals and into the stock market.
Would you look at passive income from real estate, for example? Or would you guys invest in syndications, or would you go to REITs or something like that? Or do you feel, you know, just the market, you know, in general?
I think it would be a mix of REITs and dividend paying index funds or ETFs, just so we could have that income.
What kind of index fund do you is your favorite right now?
There's this, the first ETF that I ever invested in is IJR. It's a small cap index fund. And for whatever reason, I've just loved that. I think it was because the first investment I ever made, and I've always kept my money in it. I've never sold it. So it's done really well over time.
Do you know roughly what it, on an annual basis, it's yielding?
Oh gosh, no. I follow my own advice and I don't look at my portfolio. I look at it maybe twice a year, but I try to just be very hands off and trust in the process. You know, I really only invest in the long term. I'm not trying to time the market, so I'm not looking at it closely enough to know.
Right, sure. That's okay. How do you feel about crypto?
I don't invest in it, and I don't recommend that people invest in it. And I know there's a lot of different opinions on that, but the way I see it is it's more a currency exchange than an investment. And the other thing I tell my readers and people that follow me is don't ever invest in something you don't understand. And yes, I could go read a bunch of books on crypto, but I haven't cared enough to do that, because I still think that in the long term, investing in those passive investments like index funds and ETFs is the way to go.
You say, it sounds like you're fairly conservative in terms of your investments, I would imagine.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't really invest in individual stocks. If I did, I would just see it more as, you know, play money or as a gamble. Because anytime you invest in an individual company, there is more risk. The diversification is really what helps you reduce the risk.
Right. Well, great. Well, we're getting a little bit of, you know, general financial advice here from you, as well as real estate, which is great. Well, we've come to the part of the show, what we call our wrap it up. And in here, I ask you a series of quick questions, and you share resources that have been valuable to you so that our listening audience can benefit as well. So if you are ready, are you ready to wrap it up?
I'm ready.
All right.
Let's do it.
Let's go. First question. Favorite real estate book?
Oh, I would have to go back to Hold by the McKissicks and Steve Chater. I love that one.
That is such a great book, and I'm surprised that I don't hear it more from my guests, because I think it's a great book, too. A lot of good stuff in there. I used to get a lot of my early forms out of there, too.
And
yes. It was really good, and they have a great story, too, the McKissicks. But yeah, that's great. How about just a favorite general business book?
I would say I'm torn. Can I give two?
Yes, of course.
Okay. First is The Millionaire Fast Lane by MJ DeMarco. I think it's incredible. It's one of the most eye-opening books I read at a young age about turning your mindset from a consumer mindset into a producer mindset. Very, very cool book. And then secondly, I recently read Tools of Titans by Tim Ferriss, and it is just I mean, stock full of information. It's really, really cool.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Two good recommendations. What would you say is your number one, the most valuable website for success?
I would say I've always been a big fan of Paula Pant, who runs Afford Anything.
Yes, she's a guest on our show too.
Oh, okay, great. Yeah, I love her. I'm a huge fan. So she has a podcast and she has her website and blog. And I've always loved following her because she talks about both financial management and also real estate investing.
Yeah, that's great. I think I recommend highly her stuff. It's very good. How about a favorite app?
Oh, Mint for sure. Mint is what I recommend in Money Honey because to me it's the best free app for managing your money. And the way it works is you link all of your credit, debit cards, bank accounts, and it'll pull all of your transactions into one location. So that makes it very easy to see where your money is going.
Does it also give you status in terms of net worth?
Yes, and that's one of the ways I track my net worth because it gives you a really great account overview. You can look at your trends and your spending, how your net worth is increasing over time. It's free, and you can use it on your phone and on the computer.
That's great, great. How about a favorite quote?
There's one by Zig Ziglar, and it's something about basically, I forget the exact quote, but it's about getting started today instead of waiting. And it's about, you know, basically saying that it's never going to be the perfect time to start. So just start today. And taking imperfect action is better than not taking action at all.
That's great. Well, we'll look it up, just to make sure it's the right quote. And people can check it out on our show notes. So great.
Perfect.
Okay, here's one for you. And I don't know if you ever had to encounter, I don't think you've lived long enough to encounter this. But let's say you lost absolutely everything. And knowing what you know today, let's say you only have $1,000 in cash in your hand, what would you do to rebuild your real estate investing little empire there?
I love this question. I would wholesale. It's not something I ever did, but if I didn't have, even if I had $0 and I wanted to get into real estate investing, that's where I would start. Because essentially you can learn and become educated and get practice finding deals and making offers all with zero money, and then sell those offers or those contracts to other investors who then take the house and they flip it or they rent it out and do whatever they want. So I've seen people easily make 5, 10, 15 grand per deal as a wholesaler. And it would only take, you know, 4 or 5 of those in a market like Louisville, Kentucky, to then have enough of your own money to invest and buy your own property.
That's great. That's great. It's funny. I feel the exact same way. I guess because I've heard so many people say they would say, I don't even need the $1,000. I could do it without it because
yeah.
I have done it, you know, and I've gone out and I found the buyers and I found the sellers and boom, put them together. And, you know, you've got 5, 10, 15, 20,000. Boom. It's a great way to do it. I definitely would learn it if that happened. I think it's a great thing.
Yeah.
Awesome. Wow. Well, this has been so awesome. This has been a really good, interview. You've provided some great information. I'm just amazed at your wisdom in your young years.
Thank you.
But you really, really have done well, and sounds like you guys are going to do even better in the future. So, how can people find out more about you, about your books, about some of the things you're doing? I know you talk about the content that you have on your site, different things. What's the best way for folks to reach you?
Yeah, thanks, Bill. You can buy my books, Money Honey and Passive Income Aggressive Retirement, on Amazon and Audible. My website is moneyhoneyrachel.com. And then again, if anyone wants those free budgeting worksheets, you can get those at moneyhoneyrachel.com/free. And Bill, the Zig Ziglar quote finally came to my mind. And so here's how I'll share it now.
Somebody must have run in the room with a little sign.
So here's the quote. It's, you don't have to be great to start, but you have to start to be great.
Oh, that's great. That's a great quote. I remember that one. Oh, excellent. Well, cool. Gosh, this is great. So Yeah, we'll have a link to your book and your books, and also to your website as well. Of course, you know how we close out our show. Have you? I'm not sure if you read all your notes or not. But,
I did.
I mean, you're living in Colorado now. A lot of dogs, a lot of wolves, other things there. So I think you should be able to give us a pretty good closing howl, I would think.
Okay, are you ready?
I am ready.
Okay. Oh!
I know. Isn't that embarrassing?
Yeah, but I love it. My husband and I were just listening to to your other podcast episodes to hear your other guest howls and just cracking up. It's the best part.
Oh, yeah. No, there's some, like, especially some of the early guys, they went to, because we had this, we called it the Golden Howl Award, and we'd actually give it to the best howler of the year. And it was actually like a gold dog howling. And it was really a great little thing. But
so funny. I love that you do that. It's so funny when the guests don't know, too.
Yeah, that's they're all embarrassed. It's funny. Like they'll be in their office or something, and there's some, you know, afraid everybody's going to come running in wondering if they're having a heart attack or something.
Yeah, so, yeah, it's pretty good.
Well, man, this has been really a blast, Rachel. Thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks. Same to you, Bill. Thanks so much for having me.
Oh, it's our pleasure. And I also want to thank all our old dog listeners out there, too, for joining us. I know there's a lot of other things you could be doing right now, but the fact that you've taken the time to join us means a lot, and we really appreciate it. Now, please note everything that Rachel talked about today will be outlined in detail in our detailed show notes here on the Old Dog website at olddogsreinetwork.com/blog. You're going to look for the interview with Rachel Richards. Well, that is the show for today. Remember, cash flow is king and real estate investing the means. Until next time, keep moving forward and may God bless.
Thank you very much for visiting the Old Dogs REI Network. We would greatly appreciate if you would stop by iTunes and let us know what you think of the show. We would love if you could subscribe to the podcast, give us a 5-star rating, and write a review. The more ratings and reviews we receive, the more visible the podcast will be to others. Thank you.